It's wonderful to be here with you all. I believe both Lenishi and Pretoria, both the temple devotees are here. Thank you. Yeah, okay. After such an eloquent introduction, I'm feeling tongue-tied. Thank you very much. It was although it was embarrassing to hear about myself, but I must thank you for your very wonderful quality, wonderful eloquence. Hare Krishna. What's your name?
Sarika.
Thank you, Sarika. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sharashate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much for this wonderful reception. Thank you very much for this wonderful response. I pray to Krishna that I can stay up to your expectation. I decided to give a seminar on Brahma Samhita mainly because Brahma Samhita is the essence of our culture. Brahma Samhita gives the essence of what Krishna consciousness stands for. One very unique aspect of Krishna consciousness movement is that its presentation and its approach is very scientific. And that is what makes Krishna consciousness universal. What all religions actually stand for, Krishna consciousness is present in that. Therefore, Prabhupada used to say that religion is not just a belief. Religion is a scientific understanding about the spiritual reality. And the scriptures that we follow, they give a very profound scientific understanding about the spiritual reality. Whether it's Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, all our books, all these scriptures give a very, very clear understanding about the spiritual reality. And we see, say for example in Bhagavad Gita, we see a very systematic analysis between matter and spirit. A very systematic analysis of, or very systematic distinction between matter and spirit. Then Krishna establishes our actual identity being spiritual. Then Krishna points out this material nature and what is our relationship or how we are entangled in the material nature, the karmic bond, and the karmic reaction, the modes of material nature. And then Krishna establishes himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. First, Krishna establishes the living entities are spiritual beings, non-material, spiritual beings, and then he establishes himself as the Supreme Spiritual Personality. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we see Krishna is, after describing the third chapter, the Karma Yoga, in the third chapter, Krishna tells, at the beginning of fourth chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna that I gave this knowledge to Vivarshan. And then Vivarshan gave it to his son Manu. Manu gave it to his son Ikshaku. And in this way, through a disciplic succession among the saintly kings, this knowledge has been flowing since time immemorial. Then Arjuna makes a very simple question. Krishna, Vivarshan was born so long ago, And you are born just the other day. How can you claim that you gave this knowledge to Vipashwan? Then Krishna says, many a times I have been born and so did you. But you have forgotten about your previous births, whereas I remember everything. And then Krishna says, I didn't need to take birth. I don't need to take birth because I am unborn. But still I take birth in order to establish dharma, in order to establish religious principles. And I do not take birth like living entities due to the arrangements of the material nature, but I come to this material nature through the agency of my spiritual potency. In this way, Krishna establishes himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Krishna imparts the spiritual knowledge to Arjuna. And then in the 11th chapter, Krishna reveals his universal form to Arjuna. Krishna was not only telling Arjuna that he is the origin of everything, he is the source of everything, and he is the shelter of everything, but he practically demonstrated how he is the cause of everything, how he is the shelter of everything, and how he is the maintainer of everything. And in this way, very systematically, Krishna explained, or rather practically demonstrated, so that there cannot possibly be any doubt in anyone's mind about his identity. And in this way, after establishing himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then finally Krishna tells Arjuna, now you surrender unto me. And this surrender to Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. So in this way, all our scriptures are very systematically presenting the informations about spiritual reality. And spiritual reality means, to begin with, we all are spiritual beings. That is the beginning point. We all are spiritual beings. We are not material. Our bodies are material, but we are spiritual beings. And we all are spiritual. And there is a spiritual reality beyond this material nature. And this material nature is a perverted reflection of that spiritual reality. Now, if something is existing in the reflection, we can naturally conclude that it must be existing in its original form. If it's existing in reflection, this must be there in its original form. Therefore, whatever is existing in the material nature, its original counterpart is there in the spiritual nature. And therefore, whatever we are seeing that are existing in the material nature are there in the spiritual reality. All the varieties of the material nature are there in the spiritual nature. It is not that spiritual nature is without any form, without any shape, without any qualities, and without any variety. Rather, the spiritual nature is the origin of all the form, of all the qualities, and all the varieties, and all the potencies. So in this way, very systematically, these informations about the spiritual reality has been provided through the scriptures. And that's what our movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, stands for. This movement was started by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just whimsically started this movement. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he actually furthered this movement as an essence of entire Vedic wisdom. The foundation of this movement is the Vedic wisdom. The Vedic wisdom has been summarized in two literatures, two scriptures, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedic wisdom flows through two specific branches known as Upanishads and Puranas. Gita, Bhagavad Gita, is the essence or the crest jewel of all Upanishads. Sarva Upanishado Gabo Dogdha Gopala Nandana Vatsa Partha Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gitam Ditam Mahat. So all the Upanishads are compared to a cow. Sarva Upanishado Gabo and Dogdha Gopala Nandana. Gopal, Krishna, is the cowherd boy who milked that cow. Arjun is the calf of that cow. The cow gives the milk for the sake of the calf, but the calf doesn't drink all the milk of the cow. The calf drinks only a little bit of it, and the rest of the milk is meant for human beings. Similarly, the calf of this cow of Gita Upanishad is Arjun, and the milk that Krishna milked from that cow is this Bhagavad Gita. Essence of all Upanishads. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all Puranas. All the Puranas have been compared to desire tree. The entire Vedas have been compared to a desire tree. Nigama, Kalpatarur, Galitam Phalam, the ripened fruit of that desire tree is Srimad Bhagavatam. Not just the ripened fruit, this ripened fruit again has been blended with the nectar from the lotus lips, lotus mouth of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Shuka Mukhad Amrita Drava Samyutam. Amrita Drava. The nectar, nectarian fluid or nectarian juice from the lotus lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami has been blended with this. So we can see how relishable this Srimad Bhagavatam actually is. And that is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached through these two scriptures, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. But it has further been extended by the Goswamis of Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings have been magnified through unlimited number of books written by the Goswamis of Vrindavan. But Brahma Samhita is actually the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a very wonderful scripture. Brahma Samhita, what we find is the fifth chapter only. Brahma Samhita originally had 100 chapters. While Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling through South India, when he went to Rameshwaram, in a temple there he found these two scriptures, Brahma Samhita and Krishna Kardamrita. And he copied those two books and carried them with him. And that's how he actually found, that's why Brahma Samhita became accessible, available to us. And Chaitanya, why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought this to Brahma Samhita and Krishna Karnamrita? Brahma Samhita is the essence of the Siddhanta. And Krishna Karnamrita is the essence of bhajan. How to practice Krishna consciousness? The practice of Krishna consciousness has been exemplified in the Krishna Karnamrita. So, this fifth chapter of Brahma Samhita is giving us the essence of the Vedic conclusion, especially the conclusion of Gauriya Vaishnava Siddhanta. Although there are four other Vaishnava Sampradayas, Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya, the line that is coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is very special, very extraordinary. Why it is extraordinary? It is extraordinary because while other sampradayas and their approach, their conclusion, gives us an understanding of Vaikuntha, Gauriya Vaishnava Siddhanta, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving us informations beyond Vaikuntha. There are four other sampradayas, Brahma, Rudra, Shri and Kumar. These are the four bona fide Vaishnava sampradayas. But these four Vaishnava sampradayas give informations about spiritual reality up to Vaikuntha. But beyond Vaikuntha there is another region, the topmost region of the spiritual sky, which is known as Golok. Information about Golok was not available to the other sampradayas. But Krishna appeared in Dwapar Yuga, not only in Dwapar Yuga, but at a very special Dwapar Yuga. In a day of Brahma consists of 1000 Chaturyugas. Chaturyuga means Satya, Treta, Dwapar, Kali. These four yugas combined together make one Chaturyuga or Divya Yuga. And the duration of Brahma's day is 1000 such Chaturyugas. And same is the length of duration of Brahma's night. And in this way, Brahma's day and Brahma's night consists of 2000 Chaturyugas. Now during the 28th Chaturyuga of a day of Brahma, on this 28th Chaturyuga, in the Dwapar Yuga, Krishna comes in his original, revealing his original identity. That is, Krishna of Vrindavan comes down to the earth planet. Just once in a day of Brahma, Krishna comes. So performing his pastimes in that Dwapar Yuga, after performing his pastimes, Krishna considers, I have revealed my Vrindavan pastimes, but how will anyone have access to Vrindavan? Because devotees naturally render devotional service to me following the rules and regulations of the scriptures. And by rendering devotional service to me following the rules and regulations of the scriptures, following Vaidhi Bhakti, when one achieves perfection, he attains Vaikuntha. So how will anyone ever have access to Vrindavan, which is beyond Vaikuntha? Therefore, Krishna decided to come as a devotee. And that is Shri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this way, when Krishna performs his pastimes on the 28th Chaturyuga of a day of Brahma in the Dwapar Yuga, in the following Kali Yuga, Krishna appears as a devotee, as Shri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as Shri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he reveals the mystery of Golok Vrindavan. And he shows everyone the way to Golok Vrindavan. That is the uniqueness of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift. This gift is not available in any other age, in any other millennium. It's only in this particular Kali Yuga that gift becomes available due to the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and access to Golok Vrindavan. Now we can see that what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave has been also revealed by Brahma after he realized Krishna. So this fifth chapter of Brahma Samhita is giving that description. At the beginning, Brahma Samhita describes the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, the first verse of this chapter, just as in a literature, at the beginning you give the basic conclusion first and then you start the description. That's how it's also happening in this fifth chapter. The first verse is actually giving us the identity of Krishna. Who is Krishna? Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karana. Who is Krishna? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his form, is transcendental, Satchidananda Vigraha. His form is of eternity knowledge and bliss. And he is Anadir Adir Govinda. He is the original beginning of the beginningless. Anadir Adi. That Anadi means that doesn't have any beginning. And he is the beginning of that doesn't have. Anadir Adir Govinda and Sarvakarana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. Now these points will be elaborately described by Brahma in this chapter. How Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how his forms are transcendental, and how his forms are of eternity knowledge and bliss. He is the source of all beauty, and how he is the cause of all causes, and he is the Govinda. Now in this respect, Krishnadas, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami makes a very beautiful point in his commentary. He is saying that although the name Krishna is the most exalted of all the names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but in Brahma Samhita, this Krishna name, although has been used in the first verse, but later on we see that when Brahma is actually offering his prayers, that name hasn't been used. The name Govinda has been used. And that name Govinda has been specifically used because to establish the fact that Krishna in Vrindavan is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who tends the cows and gives pleasures to the cows. Who is the maintainer of the cows? And he is Govinda. So this is how Vrindavan supremacy, in order to establish the supremacy of Golok Vrindavan, Krishna's specific name as Govinda has been established. Now Golok means the planet of cows. Go means cow and Lok means planet. So spiritual sky actually is a planet of cows. Golok or Gokul. Gokul. And Krishna therefore is Gopal, Govinda. And a very special region of that area is Govardhan, where the cows multiply. Vardhan means increase. So in that region the cows flourish, cows increase. Govardhan. So that is the region of the cows, the abode of the cows, the planet of the cows. That is why cows are so important to us. Our culture is actually based on cow protection. Namo Brahmanna Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. For the benefit of the cows and for the benefit of the Brahmana. That is the human culture. The human culture thrives on, and human culture is based on maintaining and protecting cows and honoring the Brahmanas. So, in this way, after establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brahma Samhita is describing how describing the spiritual abode of Krishna. What his abode is like. That his abode is a very unique place. That place is like a thousand petaled lotus. Krishna's abode is like a lotus with thousands of petals. Sahasrapatra Kamalam Gokulakhang Mahatpadam. So Gokul is like a thousand petaled lotus. And Tat Karnikaram Tat Dhamma Tat Anantamsha Sambhavam. Tat Anantamsha Sambhavam. This Krishna's abode is actually a manifestation of Ananta. Ananta is an expansion of Krishna. That is, Krishna's first expansion is Balaram. And Balaram is the caretaker. Now Balaram provides for all the necessities of Krishna. Balaram expands into his dham, tad anantansha sambhavam. Karnikaram mahat jantram shatkonam vajra kilakam sharanga shatpadisthana prakritya purushena cha. So, the Karnikaram. The Karnikar means the whirl of that lotus. It's like his abode is like a lotus, and the whirl of the lotus is where Krishna is situated. Krishna's abode is in the whirl of the lotus. And that, there is a further description. like how that abode is hexagonal, and there are on each angle of this hexagon there are different syllables of a mantra, and that mantra is actually Gayatri. Klim Krishnaya Govindaya Gopijana Vallabhaya Swaha. So anyway, there's a very systematic description. Like, why do we chant Gayatri? This particular Gayatri is going to take us to that region. Just by chanting this mantra, we will be elevated to that region. So that is the potency of the mantra. Not we will be elevated to that region. That mantra will take us there. The pure chanting of the mantra will just elevate us there, take us there. Understanding of the mantra is actually is the elevation to the abode of Krishna, which is the world of the lotus. And then there is further description at how these petals of this lotus are actually the abode or the place of residence of the gopis. In this way, the spiritual sky has so many associates of Krishna, and they are having such wonderful exchange with Krishna. We cannot even imagine how beautiful, how sweet, how wonderful those exchanges are with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then in this way, Krishna's I'll just brisk through this first 28 verses just to give a basic understanding. Another reason why I wanted to give a seminar on Brahma Samhita is that we recite Brahma Samhita on various occasions. Oftentimes, in some temples I notice every morning they recite Brahma Samhita. They recite, but they often have noticed that the devotees don't actually have a proper understanding of what Brahma Samhita is saying. Although the teachings of Brahma Samhita is absolutely essential for us. If we understand Brahma Samhita, if we understand these 56 verses of Brahma Samhita, not even 56, if we understand about 27 verses of Brahma Samhita, then we'll have a perfect understanding of the spiritual reality. We'll understand who is Lord Shiva, who is Lakshmi, who are different demigods, what are the relationship between Krishna and the living entities? What is the relationship between the Maya and Krishna? All these understandings become clear. We get to see how Krishna is the cause of all causes, how everyone is actually subservient to Krishna, and either expansions of Krishna or parts and parcels of Krishna. Potency of Krishna or Krishna himself, his incarnations. So this understanding is very, very important. Often we recite the verses, we memorize the verses even, but what's the point in memorizing the verses or reciting the verses if we don't have a clear understanding? Prabhupada used to sometimes say, why am I writing the books? So that you can sell them and make some money. He said, I'm writing the books so that you read them and understand them. Often we see also, there is so much emphasis on book distribution, but very little emphasis on systematic studies of those literatures of Srila Prabhupada. Often we see that we go out and distribute books, but we don't cultivate the people that we have distributed the books. So our approach, our purpose should be wholesome, not fragmental. It should serve the entire purpose, not just the partial achievements. What are the purpose of the books? The purpose of the books is to read them, understand. And when we appreciate the books, then go out, give it to others. And when we give the books to them, we must make it a point that we help them in understanding the books. Personally, I feel that that is how we should approach. Not just some make a big sensation, distribute books, big marathon, millions of books have gone out. But at the end of the day, when you consider how many devotees are made, the number didn't increase. What's the use of that? Prabhupada obviously didn't want that. Prabhupada's purpose and Prabhupada's understanding, Prabhupada's approach were very, very systematic, very far-reaching. Whatever he did it with a purpose. So first thing is that we must study those books ourselves and understand what's there in these books and then go out and preach. And the preaching tool are these books. The substance for our preaching are these books. If we preach, people may forget. But then we give them the book. Read it. And when they read it, they'll remember what he preached to them. And this is how their life is going to be affected. And anyway, so the point is, like, we have to properly understand why we are studying this. Why we are reciting Brahma Samhita. So many of us practically know all the verses of Brahma Samhita. At least when we read them, you know, we can very clearly recite them. But understanding is important. And we see, when you understand, then only we become fixed up in our Krishna consciousness. So, this from 2nd to 5th verse are describing the abode of Krishna. What is the specific purpose of Krishna's? I mean, how is Krishna's abode? Krishna's dham. That has been described in these four verses. 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. 6th verse is describing how Krishna doesn't have any association with, Krishna doesn't associate with his external potential, Maya. That's the difference between external potency and internal potency. Krishna is situated in his internal potency. And all of his dealings are in his internal potency. All his activities are based on or designed by his internal potency. And the external potency he doesn't deal directly with. And that is why it is called his external potency. And what is his external potency? This material nature. Therefore we find that Krishna is declaring that when I come to this nature, I come through the agency of my internal force. Sambhavami Atma Mayaya. I come, I manifest myself through my internal potency. Atma Mayaya. And then what is Krishna, how does Krishna deal with the external potency? He simply glances towards the external potency. And just due to his glance, this material nature becomes manifest. He doesn't deal with this material nature. He simply glances towards the material nature. And that glance of Krishna causes the material nature to become agitated. How the material, what does it mean? She becomes agitated. Due to the glance of Krishna, the living entities come into the material nature. And it is due to the presence of the living entities in the material nature that the material nature becomes manifest. Otherwise, the material nature remains in an unmanifested state. Abhyakta and vyakta. Material nature normally remains in an unmanifested state. A matter doesn't have the ability to become manifest or become active by itself. Isn't it? Isn't that our observation? Matter by itself cannot do anything. Like for example, this is gross matter, inert matter. By itself it cannot move. But if I pick it up, it moves. Right? Similarly, this body is made of matter. This body by itself cannot become active. But when the soul is in the body, then the body becomes alive. So it is the presence of the soul that causes matter to become active. So material nature becomes manifest because of Mahavishnu's glance. It is through Mahavishnu's glance that the living entities come into the womb of material nature. And when Mahavishnu withdraws his glance, then the material nature becomes unmanifest again. Abhyakta dini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata abhyakta nidhananeva tatra ka paridevana. Krishna is telling Arjuna that this nature, material nature, was unmanifest. All the living entities were unmanifest. They become manifest at some point in time. And then again they become unmanifest. So this is the nature of this material nature. Everything in this nature was unmanifest, became manifest, and will become unmanifest again. Jatasya hi dhruva mrittur dhruvam janma mrittasya cha. Whoever is born, it's inevitable that he will die. And who has died, it's inevitable that he'll be born again. Dhruvam janma mrittasya cha. So Krishna casts his glance by sending the time energy. Krishna's glance is the time energy. And it is the time energy that causes the material energy to become activated. And everything in the material nature exists in time or on time. Isn't it? We are, our existence is related to time. That's very interesting actually. Long time ago when I was young, I read a book by H.G. Wells called Time Machine. How many of you read that? Okay. So there, he actually makes that point. that things are not really three-dimensional. He added a fourth dimension. The fourth dimension is time. And from that he actually went off into this mental concoction of creating a time machine, like how one can move in time. They call it science fiction. They're more of a fiction than science, actually. But I was thinking that he actually made a very, very relevant point, which becomes clarified here, that everything is actually relative to time, related to time. Time is indeed the fourth dimension. Not the fourth dimension, time is actually the first dimension, because that is Krishna's energy. So, it is that Krishna's energy as Kala causes things to become manifest. Then, Rama Devi, the chit potency of Krishna, is the regulatrix principle of all entities. And divine hello is Sambhu. So there are two energies, two things that are functioning here. Krishna's chit potency is actually the female aspect, and Krishna's glands is the male aspect, Sambhu. And everything is a product of this principle. The term that has been used there in Brahma Samhita is linga jonitvat. The male genitive organ and female genitive organ. So that is the cause of all manifestation. And in the in his purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is actually making a very far out point, saying not only human beings, not only even trees and plants, even the inanimate objects are also caused by this principle of male-female energy or male-female concept. And that is because origin of that creation of this material nature is that. Material nature is the female aspect, and Mahavishnu's glands is the male aspect. This male aspect is Lord Shiva, and female aspect is material nature or Mahamaya or Durga or Parvati. Lord Shiva is the Purusha, and material nature is the female counterpart. Then from 10 to 17th verses, there is a description of Mahavishnu and Brahma and Shiva, their intricate understanding of these concepts. And then 18 to 22nd verses are describing Brahma's appearance. How Brahma appeared from the navel of Vishnu. And there a point is made that every living entity is actually connected to the navel of Vishnu. We all are connected to the navel of Vishnu, because we all are coming from the spiritual source of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, when Brahma appeared, Brahma was in confusion. Brahma didn't know who he was. Brahma's situation, try to imagine, Brahma's situation was like if one morning you wake up in a strange place and you do not have any remembrance of your past, how do you feel? One fine morning you woke up in Johannesburg and you your memory has been completely obliterated. I think some writers wrote something. Was it Camus or Kafka? He described something like that. He woke up in the morning and he didn't have any recollection of what he was. We can imagine. We don't have to go to Camus or Kafka. Like, we can consider ourselves. Now, Brahma's situation was like that. The difference between us and Brahma is that, like, we were born in ignorance, and within our intelligence and our memory, our senses, sense perceptions, gradually developed. Very gradually developed. Like from a child, baby, we didn't know anything. We didn't have any remembrance, nor did we have any developed intelligence. But then our intelligence gradually developed, and our perceptions developed, our awareness of the material nature developed. Like a baby gets to know who is his mother, who is his father, and then this is toy, this is candy, this is milk, and this is how, and this is A, B, C, D, this is 1, 2, 3, 4. Like this is how he acquires the information from the material nature, and this is how his consciousness develops. But Brahma was not like that. Brahma's consciousness was fully mature. But he didn't have any remembrance of the past. This is how we can see that in the material nature, everyone is born in ignorance. Everyone in this material nature is born in ignorance. Even Brahma was born in ignorance, although he came directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And consider what an incredible ability he had. He found himself situated on a lotus, and he felt that if I climb down the lotus, then I'll be able to find out. If I go back to where I came from, then I'll know who I am. Thinking that, Brahma started to climb down the lotus. And he climbed down the lotus for 1,000 years. Not according to our calculation. According to his calculation. Or according to demigod's calculation. Still he couldn't find the bottom. And in Srimad Bhagavatam it has been described that he came very close to the Supreme Personality of God. Or you can say, he came very close to the navel of the Supreme Personality of God, where he was originated from. But because his vision, he didn't develop the spiritual vision, that's why he couldn't see the Lord. We may be very close to the Lord, but if we do not have the proper perception, proper vision, then we won't be able to see him. Like he's situated in our hearts, but we can't see him. Even when the heart is transplanted, even then we don't see him. We can see our heart, but still we don't see him. So, unless and until we develop a spiritual vision, we won't be able to see the spiritual objects. It's plain and simple as that. So we can consider what an incredible ability Brahma had. Like he could climb down the stem for 1,000 years. And then he climbed back again and he was wondering, what am I going to do now? And then he was inspired from within, through the agency of the sound of the waves, tapaha, tapa. Internalize yourself, Brahma. Go within. And then Krishna, by playing his flute, gave Brahma the Gayatri Mantra. And Brahma meditated on the Gayatri Mantra. And by meditating upon Gayatri Mantra, Brahma developed his spiritual perception. And he saw the supreme, the spiritual sky. He went to the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So developing our spiritual perception will enable us to go to the spiritual sky and see for ourselves. That's what Brahma did. He went there and he saw Krishna. So that have been very beautifully described in the verse 27 and 28. I'll just read those, the translation of those two verses. Verse 27, text 27. Then Gayatri, mother of the Vedas, being made manifest, that is, imparted by the divine sound of the flute of Sri Krishna, entered into the lotus mouth of Brahma, born from himself through his 8 ear holes. The lotus-born Brahma, having received the Gayatri, sprung from the flute song of Sri Krishna, attained the status of the twice-born, having been initiated by the supreme primal preceptor, Godhead himself. So this is how Brahma received the Gayatri and he was initiated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And then the text 28, enlightened by the recollection of that Gayatri, embodying the 3 Vedas, Brahma became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. Then he worshipped Sri Krishna, the essence of all Vedas, with this hymn. So then, the verse text 29 onwards is actually Brahma's prayer to the Supreme Personality of God. When Brahma saw Krishna face to face in the spiritual abode, then Brahma started to offer his prayers. So these prayers are not actually some sort of poetic rendition. These prayers are spontaneous revelation due to the direct perception. Brahma is describing what has been, what he was perceiving. And it was not just some mundane perception through our mundane senses, but it was a revelation within the heart and a direct perception of the spiritual sky. And in the spiritual sky, in the topmost region of the spiritual sky, perceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Brahma is describing what Brahma is seeing. He is seeing the beautiful spiritual sky, which is Vrindavan. It's a forest, but it's a very unique forest. Chintamani Prakara Satma. So the land there is touchstone. Everything that is, all the houses there, Prakara Satma Shu, the houses there are made of touchstones. And Kalpavriksha Lakshavriteshu. There are all the trees in the forest of Vrindavan are desire trees. And Surabhi Ravi Palayantam. The cows there that Krishna is tending, they are all Surabhi cows. They are not ordinary cows, they are Surabhi cows. You know what a Surabhi cow is? Surabhi cow, not only one cow can create an ocean of milk. But Surabhi cow can actually fulfill any desire. To give an example, Surabhi's daughter is Nandini. There is one Surabhi cow in this universe, in the material nature. And that cow is called Nandini. So it is a Surabhi. She is also a Surabhi cow. And she is the She is in the ashram of Vasishtha Muni. She was Vasishtha's cow. And one day a king came to Vasishtha's ashram. The king with his entourage, with his soldiers, he was hunting in the forest. And then in the forest they became tired and exhausted and hungry. So they saw a hut. A beautiful garden with a beautiful house there, hut. And so he went and approached the sage there, Vasishtha, and told, "Look, we are hungry, and so we want some food." So Vasishtha said, "Go take your bath. I'll make arrangements." So they thought, okay, maybe they'll make some arrangement, maybe some fruits and roots. But when they came back, they found the most incredible banquet has been arranged. Most delicious preparations were served in golden plates studded with diamonds and sapphires and rubies. And the most delicious drinks were served in the most incredibly precious goblets. And he was awestruck. And the food was so delicious that even though he was a king, he never tasted food like that. So he was amazed and he asked him, "How did you make all this arrangement?" So Vasishtha said, "Look, I have a cow, and that cow is a Surabhi cow, and she can provide with anything that I need. Whatever I ask, she can give. So we all came, so I just asked her, and she made all the arrangement." Now consider, she is Surabhi's daughter, and that also in the material nature. So can you imagine what a Surabhi, what a mother must be like in the spiritual sky? So cow, the cows that Krishna is tending in Vrindavan, they are all Surabhi cows. Do you want to know what Nandini did after that? Okay. So then Vishwamitra was, king, Vishwamitra was very surprised, you know, he said, "Wow." He said, "Look, you give me the cow." He said, Vasishtha said, "Look, she's like my daughter. I can't give her to you. He says, "Look, you just, what do you need a cow like this for? You're living in a forest, you don't need anything. You give it to me, I am a king, you know, and she can be very useful to me." So Vasishtha says, "No, please don't ask her anything, but this I can't." Vishwamitra said, "Look, I'll give you 1,000 cows, million cows. They'll all be decorated with the most beautiful golden ornaments." Vasishtha declined. Then Vishwamitra got really upset. He said, "This man, although he's living in a forest as a sage, But he's so greedy. So he ordered his soldiers to forcibly take the cow. Then when they were dragging Nandini away, the Nandini, with tears in her eyes, told Vasishtha that all along you had treated me like your daughter and I looked up to you as my father. Now look how these rogues are treating me, and won't you come to my rescue? Vasishtha said, look, I am a Brahmin. I can't get into a conflict with anybody. But if you want, you can defend yourself. And immediately Nandini created a battalion of army. And they, that Nandini's army defeated Vishwamitra's army. Vishwamitra summoned everyone, practically was dead. And Vishwamitra somehow escaped and ran away. So then Vishwamitra realized, and that's the power of a Brahmana. So he, although he was a Kshatriya, he wanted to become a Brahmana. And after a lot of trouble, he did become a Brahmana. He also became a sage, Vishwamitra. So this is the potency of a Surabhi cow. So that is what the spiritual sky is like. Surabhi Ravi Palayantam. And Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Ramasilvyamanam. There are thousands and thousands of Lakshmis are very respectfully, reverentially rendering service to Krishna, taking care of Krishna's transcendental needs. So that is what Brahma saw, and that's how he's describing. And then he started to describe, after describing the spiritual abode of Krishna, he started to describe Krishna and what that description would be like. Krishna's description, description about Krishna is nothing but a description of Krishna's beauty. Everything about Krishna is so beautiful. Therefore, he is all attractive. So from tomorrow, from today, I just covered up to verse 28, which is more or less an introduction to Brahma Samhita, the real aspect of Brahma Samhita. And from tomorrow, we'll discuss about Brahma Samhita from 29 onwards. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Nishinanandan.
Want to explain how Lord Chaitanya gives on the 28th Chaturvyuha cycle end. Lord Chaitanya has given us the highest knowledge. So what happens in the previous Kali Yugas or the future Kali Yugas? And those, if the extensions of Vishnu, they get knowledge of Vaikuntha, and or if they meant to be in Vrindavan, do they come back to take birth in a specific 38 yuga, Chaturyuga, and then go back to Spurjuga or from there?
Yeah, you see, in other Chaturyugas, Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I mean, it's not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna of Vrindavan, appears as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other Chaturyugas, it is the Yugavatar who comes to establish the Yuga Dharma. Like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a Yugavatar in a way. Because, you know, since he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all different expansions and incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are also with him. And with that, through the Yugavatar aspect, he is establishing the Yuga Dharma. But that frame, Krishna frame, that is not the business of the Yugavatar. That Yugavatar does not give. That only Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives. And that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes during every 28th millennium, or Chatur Yuga, after the Dwapar Yuga.
I'd like to know, I've heard also of one story, I think it's with Katavira Arjuna, and I forget the name of the sage, also it said that he also had a company. Is it in the same, in this, existing in this universe, or
what's your question?
My question is talking about Nandi being the coming the only Surabhi cow in this material world. So I wanted to know how that Surabhi cow, which is mentioned in that pastime with Kartavirya Arjuna.
Do you remember which pastime was with Kartavirya Arjuna? Okay. Jamadagni, Varshyam's father. Yeah. Was the dispute about Nandini or Surabhika? I don't remember. Maybe I'll just go check it and let me see. I mean, his conflict, what caused the conflict between Jamadagni and Kartavirya Arjuna? Okay. Remind me tomorrow.
Krishna says in the Gita that Bhakti among eternity, that only by Bhakti can I be known as I am. And here we see that Lord Brahma was actually describing Krishna in such depth with deep understanding. Yet all he had to do was capacity to perform the spirit. Many places we find that Krishna also says not by your spirit in the tapana as the day it is. So I wish to know what kind of a spirit Lord Brahma performed to understand Krishna in such a way. What kind of bhakti is it?
You see, bhakti here at this stage we are seeing that Brahma's endeavor was through meditation on Gayatri. It enabled him to go to the spiritual sky, right? And he is seeing Krishna and he is describing Krishna, but the devotional service didn't begin as yet, right? That's what happens in Shantadarshan. Right? The active devotion, although the perception of the Lord is there, and by seeing the Lord, they experience an incredible joy within. But the devotional service begins from dasyavas, servitorship. Right? And in Brahma's case, that will happen. especially when Brahma, that's where Brahma came as Haridas Thakur to take part in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And by participating in Mahaprabhu's pastimes, he will have access to Vrindavan.
This is regarding the Krishna's last gift in the material nature. So is the manifestation of the material universe, galaxies, etc., are they simultaneous with the manifestation of the living entities within the material nature, material world? Because there is the conception that in modern man's conception, is that the human race has originated in the cradle of Africa, somewhere around here in the steppe of the Caltech. So is there some changes occurring regarding the creation of the cosmos as well as the creation of the living entities are immediately impregnated into the materiality?
You see, we cannot possibly understand the creation through these scientists' concocted theories. Right? I mean, better not to take that into consideration at all. Rather, let us try to understand it through the scripture or even our common sense. Like here, according to scriptures, what you find that at the beginning, a lotus came out of Lord's navel. Okay, let's go back further. Mahavishnu laid in the causal ocean. And due to his breathing, the bubbles that were created, each bubble is actually the universe. Then he entered into the bubbles, which were hollow. He filled up the half of the bubble with the water from his own body. He laid down in that ocean of water. And from his navel sprouted a lotus. Brahma, the first created being, was in that lotus. Then Brahma, in due course of time, after perceiving Krishna by meditating upon Gayatri, he was inspired, he realized what his mission was, what he was meant to do. And he realized that his business is to do the interior decoration of the universe. Right? And so he started the interior decoration. But in order to do the decoration, you have to have workers, assistants, right? So from his mind, he created four suns. Brahma is so powerful that just from his mind, he can create living entities. And those four sons of Brahma were self-realized souls from the beginning. And they say, when Brahma told them to help him in this business, they said, please excuse us. We don't want to get entangled. Brahma was upset. And these are my sons and they're not obeying my instruction. But then Brahma thought that they are my children and I shouldn't become angry with them. Because Brahma's anger could be so devastating that the children could have been burnt to ashes. Right? Therefore Brahma restrained himself. Although he restrained his anger, but his anger came out from between his eyebrows. And that is Rudra. And then Brahma created 10 more sons from his mind. And those 10 sons are 9 Prajapatis and Narad Muni. And then the creation started through them. Like Kashyap, Atri, son is Kashyap. Kashyap got married to Diti, Aditi, and Kodru, Vinata. And different species came from them as their offspring. From Aditi came the demigods, from Diti came the demons, from Kadru came the serpents, from From Vinata came Garuda and Arun. And in this way, the creation started. Now, this creation has two aspects. Inanimate aspects and the animate aspect. So animate aspect is living, is due to living beings' presence. And inanimate aspect is just things like, you know, stars and planets and universes and so forth.
We have just explained this question to other persons to come forth from there. One of them is that Western theology has a kind of mundane presentation of the origin of man, Adam and Eve. Now, what parallel do we use when we speak of Adam and Eve? You know, we're discussing this type of issue. Adam and Eve, who do we believe in? We can't believe Brahma in that, but I don't think he would fall into the category of man as such.
You see, their concept is mostly from the Hebrew. You see, both Christianity and Islam originated from the Judaic concept. And it's difficult to figure out. But only way we can probably figure it out is that from Brahma's right hand side, Manu appeared, and from his left side, Satarupa appeared. They're the first man and woman. So in that way we can say that probably that concept has been, you know, degenerated into this Adam and Eve concept. And the thing is, but the way they describe, like Adam and Eve originally was in the spiritual sky, but not spiritual sky, they were in heaven. But they lost the thing, and they lost the right to stay in heaven because of sex desire. Right? Now, there is some symbolic understanding, but it doesn't fall in perfect harmony with the Vedic concept. Like, you can take some bits and pieces from the Vedic concept and then you can justify this concept, but we can see that it's not really scientific. It's not really scientific. Whereas the Vedic concept is so perfect and so therefore it's so scientific. Like, the question may arise, where did Adam and Eve come from? What do they say? So that's why their understanding is not complete. They speak about God the Father, but who is God the Father? What does he look like? Where does he stay? There's no answer. Therefore, they have found a convenient reply to that. Jesus Christ is God. Jesus Christ is God. Then my question is, if first of all, Jesus never said that he is God. He always identified himself as the Son of God. And besides that, the most relevant question here will be, when Jesus was being crucified, he was praying to God the Father. So who is the God the Father then that Jesus was praying to? If he is God himself, then why is he praying to God? And actually, on this concept, you know, because of these differences, Christianity, the original division in Christianity came due to this disagreement. The Greek Orthodox did not accept Jesus. The Roman Catholics established that Jesus is God. But the Greek Orthodox did not accept that, and that's why they became divided.
This one is an extension of the first question about the material nature. they had this Hubble telescope and other astronomy, you know, kind of research that is showing an ongoing growth of the cosmos. And at the same time, coupled with the ongoing growth of the cosmos is a simultaneous disintegration of stars and galaxies and so on. So it's like a state of flux that's in the material nature. But does this mean that the material nature is ever expanding? How do you look at it?
Well, material nature also is unlimited. But to speak of ever expanding. It's unlimited, and it can expand naturally. Is Mahavishnu breathing just once? Right? And is he breathing only through his nose and mouth? No, he's breathing through every pore of his body. Now, try to consider it from that point of view. Mahavishnu is breathing from every pore of his hair. Right? And each bubble that is created out of that breathing is an universe. Right? Is Mahavishnu's body limited or unlimited? So number of universes is limited or unlimited? So you can see even material nature is unlimited. That is how inconceivable Krishna's potency is. And in the material nature, you see, like here, the first consideration would be the Vedas are saying, don't depend upon your defective senses. Don't depend upon your defective senses. Like I heard a story, a scientist was, you know, like watching the distant universes, right, with his big telescope. And from below, a child was blowing the bubbles. And one bubble happened to just pass through his telescope, right? And he made such a big hue and cry that he detected a new universe. So that is how reliable our senses are. What's that?
Text refers
to 18 continental records,
what are they?
18? Text 18? Okay. That is the Gayatri Mantra. That although Gayatri Mantra is not spoken in public, but since it's a Brahminical assembly, I'll venture to. And also since Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentioned that in the purport, I'll just venture to speak about it. That mantra is clean. Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopijana, Vallabhaya, Swaha. This is 18 syllables. And that is the holy name actually. The Gayatri Mantra is the holy name also.
I believe one cannot chant Gayatri Mantra, and I was told that you have to reach certain stage in order to chant Gayatri Mantra. I would like to know why we cannot chant, and what stage that we have to reach in order to chant Gayatri Mantra.
Yeah, okay. You see, mantras are the transcendental sound vibration And these sound vibrations are coming from the spiritual sky. And these mantras are kept as a secret. Right? Only when a spiritual master would see that a candidate is qualified, that a candidate is qualified, he would give him the mantra. And that ceremony is called Upanayan, Sanskar. And that through that ceremony, one receives his second birth. The first birth is through the father and mother, the birth of the body. The second birth is through the spiritual master, the birth of the spirit soul, the spiritual birth. So the mantras are meant for spiritual development. Therefore, the spiritual birth or diksha, initiation from a bona fide spiritual master is essential. Unless and until one receives the mantra from a guru, receiving due qualification, one cannot have access to the mantra. That's why it is said that these mantras are given only to the brahmanas. Brahmana means one who has been twice born.
When we do the prayer, Gujarati prayer, we cannot do without chanting mantra. We always use chanting mantra before we use the prayer, before we say it.
You see, what is your custom, that is not really we are concerned about. We are concerned about what the scripture says. Right? In this age, many people are introducing many things. But we have to see whether they are authorized and justified by the scriptures. What I just said is the words of the scriptures.
Thank you.
Just take the microphone.
So, would there not be a need to just elaborate, Maharaj, that there are various guidelines, and I think the gentleman who just spoke in the prophecy thinking about the Savitri Gayatri.
Even Savitri Gayatri have to be initiated, one has to be initiated. And that is the thing in the age of Kali, like all kinds of things are happening just by whimsical presentation. Yeah, there's here.
Maharaj, there's a description that the most pious living entity in the material world inherits the position of the Brahman. And then, in case there's no such personality, then the Supreme Self object takes on the position of the Brahman. Then, my question is does the same pastime occur in the case of the Supreme Lord being Lord Brahman, whereby he becomes bewildered and is one in ignorance and all this kind? Now that the Krishna gets bewildered in the form of Lord Brahman, in case he takes up this position, does he get bewildered?
Yes, so what's your question?
My question is I'm trying to understand if also Krishna, as Lord Brahman, gets bewildered, or does he just get taken back and start to create immediately?
Yeah, you see, that we have to understand that these are the arrangements of Yogamaya. Brahma is a pure devotee. Right? But, so there is no question of Brahma's bewilderment. But the Yogamaya potency of the Lord, in order to enhance the pastimes of the Lord, can make a pure devotee forget. So that is how Brahma actually forgot Krishna, couldn't recognize Krishna. And mind you, every day of Brahma, Krishna comes. Krishna comes to Brahma every day, sometime during the morning. And every day, Brahma forgets. when he sees that Krishna is having picnic with the cowherd boys. So we have to understand that Krishna's pastimes are like a play on a stage. They're just acting the role. It's not that just as a stage, in a stage somebody is a villain and he acts in such a terrible way, or he acts so well that you feel that he is really a villain and you feel like beating him up. But after the drama, after the play, you see that the hero and villain, with their arms around each other's shoulder, you know, they are just talking like the most intimate friends. So that is how we have to understand, or we have to accept this pastime. There is just to add a few things, few points to your question, the point that you made, is that you see, mantra is given by Guru in the ears, right? At the time of initiation. Why? Because it is kept as a secret. Right? Only a qualified person can have it. Or rather, when the Guru sees that someone is qualified, then only he gives it to him. Right? Not otherwise.
But isn't the Gayatri mantra worse than
that? No.
No.
No. Hare Krishna Mahamantra is universal, not Gayatri. Gayatri is always is a Gupta mantra, Guhya mantra.